You're listening to the teaching ministry of Houston's First Baptist Church, a relevant biblical community. For more information, visit houstonsfirst.org. Here's Pastor Greg Mott.
If you got your Bibles, turn to Genesis chapter 24 is where we're going to be, Genesis chapter 24. And as we look into this passage of scriptures, we're combining with last week we had a message on this, and we've got really about a four-part series. Where we're heading is this week, or last week, talking about marriage and dating, and then also this week talking about marriage and dating out of Genesis 24. And then next week, Brother John Bassanio, our pastor emeritus, is going to be with us, and he's going to talk about marriage, and it's going to be a great, great thing to be able to hear from his heart. And then I feel the Lord lead, not that it should go in this order by any means, but then the next week, we're going to talk about divorce. Not that we want it to go from marriage, dating, wedding to divorce, but within our culture, we need to talk about this issue. And I say that as a child of divorce. My parents are divorced when I was two, so I'm going to try to give a perspective as well from a child of divorce, some of the things of how God can do in your life. It's not going to be a shame fest in 2 weeks, okay? It's going to be a time of healing for us to be able to step forward and to do. So that's where we're going. As you're turning your Bibles, you might have noticed too that Ryan Langford led us in worship. Stephen Smith typically leads us in worship. And John Bolin in the previous service. And they are stuck from an Israel trip. They flew into this town called London. And there in London, this volcano in Iceland. Has anybody in their lifetime ever heard of Iceland affecting anything in the world? This is their moment. So they are stuck in London. So every time you see a news report, and they might be watching us online right now, when you see a news report, pray for our folks that they would get back. Because we all kind of go, ooh, cool, stuck in London. That's ooh, cool for a day, but not like 4 or 5 days. God worked it out, a miracle that they got through customs, and Stephen Smith kind of headed first through customs, ran to the phones before everybody else, and they got 20 rooms at a hotel 10 minutes away from the airport. So that's a blessing that they're all not sleeping at the airport. So just be praying for them every time that you see that, and we'll be able to just hope that they get back home safely, number one, obviously, but then quickly, number two, to be able to do that. Genesis chapter 24. When we kicked off last week, we talked about Abraham sent his servant out, and he was sending his servant out to find a wife for his son Isaac. This servant was his head servant, important guy, because marriage is the most important relationship on the face of the earth. If you're not married, doesn't mean that you're lacking. It just means it's more important than your employee-employer relationship, more important than friendships, more important than your relationship with your buddies or the people that you live in your neighborhood with. So he sends his most important servant out, and the servant says, I got a 2-point checklist. The lady's got to be in the family of God. She's got to be in Abraham's family, but we take it New Testament, to be in the family of God. And she's got to have a servant's heart. I'm going to ask her, Lord, that she would give me water at this well. And then in giving me water, she must offer to give my camels water also. It's 200 gallons of water that she's going to have to give these camels. Servant-heartedness. Marriage is not you give 50%, I'll give 50%. You'll spend your entire marriage arguing over who gave 51 that day. Marriage is you give 100%, I give 100%, and we're still going to fight at times. That's what marriage is. We've got to get this whole thing with a servant-heartedness. We talked about that God was on this journey. God was directing this servant. And now when we pick this thing up, we're picking it up with the servant sitting back and he's looking to say, did God give me this person? Is this the girl that I'm going to take back to meet the parents? There was a story or a movie a few years ago called Meet the Parents about the moment where you meet the parents. Pretty scary moment, and the movie didn't go very well for this guy. And so this is our meet the parents moment is what we're going to have in this scripture we're going to look at. And when I was preparing for this, I came across this thing that is application for permission to date my daughter. It's an application for permission to date my daughter. It's a joke, but it's funny, and it might be true. Some of y'all are going to be like, can I get a copy of that? I got a daughter. I like that. So in the meet the parents vein, this is what it says. Application for permission to date my daughter. Name, okay, date of birth, height, weight, IQ, GPA, Boy Scout rank, and badges. That's the beginning. The next says, do you own or have access to a van? Do you own or have access to a truck with oversized tires? If answering yes to any of these, discontinue application and leave premises immediately, I suggest running, is what it says. Then you have an essay section. The essay section says, 50 words or less, what does late mean to you? Second question, final question, 50 words or less. What does "don't touch my daughter" mean to you? The reference section says church you attend, how often you attend, when would be the best time to interview your father, your mother, and your pastor. And then it concludes by saying, thank you for your interest. Please allow 4 to 6 years for processing. An application to date my daughter. Meet the parents moment. Is this the one? What will everybody else think? It's in Genesis chapter 24, verse 22. Here's the servant, and he's looking, and he's wondering if God's made his journey successful. When the camels had finished drinking, the man took out a gold nose ring. I'll explain later. Weighing a beca and 2 gold bracelets weighing 10 shekels. And he asked, whose daughter are you? He doesn't know that she's in Abraham's family lineage. We do. He doesn't. Watch what he does when he finds out. Please tell me, is there room at your father's house for us to spend the night? She answered him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Michal, born to Nahor. And she added, we have plenty of straw and fodder, as well as room for you to spend the night. He finds out she's in the family. Verse 26, then the man bowed down and worshiped the Lord, saying, praise be to the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his kindness and his faithfulness to my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey. Singles, it's a journey. To the house of my master's relatives. And the girl ran and told her mother. We'll get on to that. Verse 27 is where we'll stop. He comes and he finally sees this lady. She waters his camels. And as she waters his camels, he's wondering. He says, what family are you from? Who are you from? What's your line? He finds out she's exactly what Abraham told him to go and find. He traveled hundreds of miles as a servant to find somebody in the lineage of Abraham, because the seed of Christ is going to come from Rebekah and Abraham, or Rebekah and Isaac. And so he finds this lady and he goes, whoa, this is the one. This is the one. He bows down and worships the Lord. Following Christ is crucial for a successful marriage. Following Christ is crucial for a successful marriage. It's hard enough when you're following Christ. It is almost absolutely impossible without following Christ. The first thing that he does is he bows down before God and he says, Lord, I worship you. I give you the praise. I give you the trust. It's you that I praise. You have made this journey successful. Singles, follow God in this journey. Get close to Jesus. Fall in love with Jesus. Be a godly woman. Be a godly man. Be the kind of person that if impurity was in the relationship, it would be a shock. That you're walking with God. That us as married folks, if you're married, that we're walking with God. We're not just at a place of just keeping the bottom line. We're not just cruise control. We're in a place that we are walking with God. The question is not, do you pray for your spouse? The question is, do you pray with your spouse? The question is not, do you think about spiritual things? Do you talk about spiritual things? Is your walk with Christ challenging to the person that you're married to? Is your walk with Christ inspiring to those who look at you in your marriage? Walking and following Jesus is crucial for a successful marriage. And he, at this moment, he starts off and he says, I worship you, God. And then in verse 49, you don't have to look at it, 48, but it says that he bowed down and he worshiped the Lord, and he then gave bracelets and he gave this nose ring. Now, in our culture, we like to give wedding rings. It got a diamond on the left hand, you know, this finger right here. So, ladies, if a guy offers you a nose ring, you can say, my pastor told me we need to break up, okay? So, it can be a little weird. It's okay. But in this culture, that was a deal. So, that was kind of symbolic, as we have an engagement ring. Now, ladies, I know it's not very inspiring for you to be offered a nose ring, but here's the deal, is the nose in that society was considered a place of elegance. It was the elegance of a woman, and some of you are like, good, finally something good about my nose. But here it is with the elegance of a woman. So he gets this nose ring and he gives it to her to say, you are lovely and you are elegant, and here's a place of wealth, elegance and wealth that I want to give to you. He gives her bracelets, 10 of them that weigh 10 shekels. They weigh 10 shekels because there's 10 camels. It fits perfectly with the number of camels. And he showers her with jewels. And he says, Christ, I worship you, and the treasure you've given me in this relationship, I then give you as a symbolic treasure to this lady. The servant discovered the lineage, and he reflects and inspects upon God's, God's leadership. Now, last week we talked about that this servant came to the well. Do you remember I mentioned that you got to go to the right place to find the right one? If you're just going to all the wrong places, you're not going to find the right one, typically. I know it happens sometimes, but it's better to be in a place where there's people walking with God, that God's using them, that God's breathing into their life, and from that place, then you're discovering that Christian man, that Christian woman, if you're single. The only thing worse than being single wanting to be married is being married wanting to be single. And so here as a single, you should be thinking about where can I put myself, put my life, where I could be around the right people, the kind of people I'd want to marry. Now, that's what the servant does when he comes to the well. He knows that this kind of lady is coming to this kind of place. But the lady does something different. Rebecca does something different. And it puts us in attention. The servant comes strategically to the well. Rebecca comes routinely to the well. She didn't plan out that morning she was going to meet her husband. She didn't say, today I'm going to be a servant. This is the day that I'm godly. This is the moment. She just does what she usually does. She went out to get water. That was her chore. That's what she did. And on that day of doing what she usually did, she encountered something that changed her life. We're put into attention. Singles, yes, strategically try to put your life into a place that there's godly people, but then also do what you do. Walk where you walk. Live like you live. Talk like you talk. Be who you are. Married folks, yes, we strategically go to conferences. Yes, we strategically go to counseling at times. Yes, we strategically read books. We get into it. We hunker down. We're strategic about going to the well. And at the same time, when your marriage is following Christ, do what you do. Walk where you walk. Say what you say. Live in the tension of the routine Christian life. And live in the strategy of the let's move forward Christian life. Because following Christ is crucial for a successful marriage. And when you truly follow Christ, there will be strategy to your walk, but there sure ought to be routine as well. It ought to be just what you do, not what you got to get up for, but what you do to be able to have it happen. So she ends up at this moment routinely walking to the well as he strategically walks to the well and the encounter happens. And it's the right one at the right time. And God leads on the journey. Then they journey back hundreds of miles to go and meet the family, to meet the parents' moment. Guys, do you remember when you asked for your wife's hand in marriage, that you asked her father, if he was alive, and you asked him, single guys, that's a great thing for you to do. You should do that. Don't cut that out of the marriage tradition book. That's a good one. Do you remember, guys, when you drove and you were driving those hours to that house and your stomach was churning and you were planning out what you were going to say? You were thinking about what was going to happen? I remember it. I showed up at my wife's parents' house, and they're from the country, and they've got a big old ranch. And so, I mean, it is country cooking with 2 K's is what it is. Okay, so, I mean, it is the real deal. And so we go out into the backyard, you know, back here with cows and fences. And so we're back in the backyard, and I speak for a living, so I'm got it prepared. I'm ready to go. And we get out there and we start kind of kicking rock clods, and he's kicking them and I'm kicking them. And I notice he's got boots on and I got Nikes, and so that's not good. I should have at least bought some ropers for the visit, but I didn't. And so here I am kind of kicking dirt clods. So I finally get out of my mouth. I finally get out. I love her and I want to marry her. That's all I could get out. He kind of kept kicking it. And country people own guns. I mean, I just want you to know. They do. And they have them in different places, you know, hidden different places on their purse. I mean, you don't know. So I'm in the backyard with a man that owns guns. And so he kicks some dirt around. He says, well, Greg, we think a lot of you. And I said, well, that's good. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And then he asked me, this is true. He asked me this one question. He said, you got any money in the bank? And I said, yes, sir, I've been saving. He said, well, let's get on back to the house. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. He just changed the subject. I mean, that's what he did. So I'm like, is this a good sign, or is there more guns at the house? Or what? I mean, what does that mean? I've seen there's a cellar door. I mean, what's the deal? So we get there, and it's not till the next morning that Kelly's mom comes up and hugs me and says, Charles told me, and gives me a big hug. So then I thought, okay, I'm in. It's good. But it's a nervous moment. It's a scary moment to figure those times out. To meet the parents is a moment that's a little bit scary. Listen what happens in verse 28. Verse 28, they come and watch where the girl runs and watch where Big Brother runs. Verse 28, through verse 33. The girl ran and told her mother's household. Girl runs to mom. And all about these things. Verse 29, now Rebekah had a brother named Laban. And he hurried out to the man. The big brother goes to meet the dude at the spring. As soon as he had seen the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's arm and had heard that Rebekah and heard Rebekah tell what the man said to her, he went out to meet the man and found him standing by the camels near the spring. Come, you who are blessed by the Lord. He said, why are you standing out here? I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man went to the house and the camels were unloaded. Straw and fodder were brought for the camels and water for him. And his men washed their feet. Then the food was set before him. And he said, I will not eat. The servant saying this, I will not eat until I have told you what I have to say. And Laban said, tell us then. The mom, the daughter runs to the mom and says, look at the gold. Yeah, jewelry. The brother runs to the guy and says, what's the deal with my sister is what he says. They run to these places where now they brought her, the servant back to the place to meet the parents. They run to these places that we still run in today's culture. So the mom and the daughter begin to talk. They begin to discuss, to figure out, okay, flowers, bridesmaid dresses, what are we going to do? So they're having this big conversation, and the brother takes off running out to meet the man. Now, there's something interesting that I want you to remember. We're going to get to Genesis 29 in just a few chapters. Jacob's going to fall in love, but Jacob's father-in-law is going to give him the wrong wife. Remember that story? There's going to be some trickery that happens. Do you know who the father-in-law is? It's Laban. We see here the seeds of materialism. It says in the scripture we just read, he saw the gold, he saw the nose ring, and he went out, and he started talking with the man. So, oh, we've got straw for you. We've got things for you. Yeah, come on. We're going to see that seed of materialism blossom into deception with Jacob, where he's going to say, work for me for 7 years, then I'll give you my daughter. Oh, I gave you the wrong daughter. Work for me another 7 years, then I'll give you the right daughter. So let's just remember this as we're going to get further in the scripture. He goes and we see this seed of materialism. His motives of trickery are already beginning to show. But what we can take away from this is a deep, deep point that we have forgotten within our culture in many ways. The wisdom of older godly people is important. The wisdom of older godly people is important. It matters what your parents think about your boyfriend. It matters what your parents think about your girlfriend. It matters what older, wiser, godlier people think about your fiancé and engagement. That is crucial. Because if older, wiser, godly counsel looks and goes, I'm not sure, you need to take a pause. No one is ever upset that they were too slow and they asked for too much wisdom. No one ever worries about that. Singles, take it slow. Only thing you got to decide on date one is there date two? You don't have to name the kids. You don't have to figure out where you're going to live. Date two is all you got to decide on date one. Date three is all you got to decide on date two. And get older, wiser counsel to speak into your life. Married folks, the same thing. When you encounter trouble in marriage, get with somebody older and wiser than you. Get with somebody godlier than you are and sit down with them and say, you know, I need you to help me with this. Will you help me work through this problem? And they'll work through that. In our newlywed and nearly wed class, we've been keeping statistics for the last 12 years of what the divorce rate is for folks that go through that class, that get with older, wiser people. Do you know what the divorce statistics are from that class? 6 to 8% compared to the national average of 50 to 60%. Why? Because they've got an older and wiser to be able to say, can you help me with this, to work through this? Older and wiser is vastly important. But what do? We don't do it because our defenses go up. We don't want anybody telling us who to pick for marriage. We don't want anybody telling us how to work out our problems. We're prideful and defensive. So it goes up and the defenses are high. Put your pride down and listen and hear. And you'll hear older and godly, wise counsel. They go to the parents. She begins to talk with her mom. And if we read between the lines, maybe we can see this, of taking this thing together. So now they've been with the family, and the next step we're going to have is the two are going to meet. The two are going to meet. My wife was trying to encourage a friend of ours, a girl that's single, and she told her, I was standing there, and she said, somebody, God has got somebody special for you. I mean, it's just one of those look me in the face, girl, I want to tell you, girlfriend to girlfriend type thing. And I'm watching going, that's weird, guys don't do that. But they girls do this. And so looked her in the face and said, God's got somebody special for you. I mean, absolutely special. And the girl said something I thought was so funny. She looked and she said, you know, I want special, but right now I'll just take normal. I can just find a normal one. I'll take it. We're going to see Isaac and Rebecca. It's not just going to be normal. It's going to be special. Now, I want you to get, girls, it could be easier for you. Guys, do this. Get your romance heart on. Watch the movie screen open up as Isaac and Rebecca, their eyes meet. She's been on a journey for hundreds of miles to find this man, Isaac. He doesn't know that they're coming back at this moment. No one telegraphed ahead. There's no cell phone. He didn't get a tweet from Twitter. He didn't check his Facebook. Nothing happened. He's just hanging out in the fields. And look what happens in chapter 24, verse 61. All from 33 to 61 is recap of what we already have heard. Verse 61, here's what it says. Then Rebekah and her maids, ladies, circle maids and show your husband. Rebekah and her maids got ready and mounted their camels. Men, circle camels and say, you got a nice car. And then went back to with the man. And so the servant took Rebekah and left. Verse 62. So Isaac had come from Beer Lo Hai Roy. I know that sounds like an imported lager, but it's not. Beer Hai Lo Hai Roy. Beer Lo Hai Roy is what it is. And he's there, for he was living in Negev, verse 63. And he went out into the field one night to meditate. As he was looking up, he saw the camels approaching. Rebekah also looked up and saw Isaac. She got down from her camel, respect. And she asked the servant, who is the man in the field coming to meet us? He's my master, the servant answered. So she took her veil and covered herself, purity. Verse 66, then the servant told Isaac all that he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, he cared for. He married Rebekah, so she became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Do you get that picture? It's sunset in the evening. Isaac's walked out into the field, and he's kind of kicking rocks, maybe. Looking up at the stars, wondering what God's going to do, possibly praying. And then on the horizon, here comes a whole bunch of camels and a whole bunch of people. How many men do you think she had passed on those hundreds of miles of a journey? And she said, who's that man? Who's that man? It's not always love at first sight. Sometimes it's not even like at first sight. But in this moment, it could have been. So she comes and they begin to meet at sunset on this long journey to find this one that Abraham had sent out his servant to bring back a wife for his son Isaac. He is thinking and she is coming on these camels. And I'm going to give you two things for ladies and two things for men. We're going to step on the ladies' toes for a minute and then we're going to step on the men's toes. Don't worry, it'll be even. She gets off of her camel and veils herself. She shows purity and respect. She shows purity and respect. She gets off of her camel in a sign of respect. She veils herself in a sign of purity. Getting off the camel is a sign of respect. If you respected somebody, you wouldn't stay up on a horse or a camel in that time because you'd be looking down on them. That'd be a disrespectful position. So you'd get off your camel or your horse and you look eye to eye to say, we're equal, we're even. I want to respect you. I understand who you are. She gets off her camel to respect this man. Ladies, let me just say it as firm as I can say it, as clear as I can say it. If you want to wreck your marriage, if you want to wreck a relationship with a man, disrespect him. Disrespect him. There is nothing more belittling to a man that takes his legs out from under him than a disrespectful wife. If you're going to talk bad about him, you talk bad about him with your godly counsel, one person, that person, and you say, how can you help me with this? You don't roll your eyes at your husband. You don't make fun of him. You don't pick on him. I'd encourage you, don't try to correct him and guide him in public. Just let him be wrong and be thought right. To be in that moment to respect the man is crucial. In Ephesians chapter 5, it talks about men and women. And it says, husbands, love your wives. And we're going to get there. And then it says in verse 33, a wife must respect her husband. See, two bucks will be out there in the wild and they'll fight. They'll go horn to horn. But a buck won't fight a doe. So you get two guys and they start mixing it up, they'll duke it out about it. You get a lady and a man duking it out about it, the man will just get passive and he'll get henpecked right into the recliner. And then you'll begin to henpeck him at why he's not a leader. And the reason he's not a leader is because his legs have been taken out from under him and he's scared and unconfident about being a leader. Respect him. Respect him. Tell him he is the greatest person on the face of the earth until you believe it. Because he'll believe you, and he needs to hear it. That respect enables a man to be a man. You want to be married to a man, you want to be married to a mouse. Which do you want? It comes down on respect. Rebecca got off the camel, and she said, number one thing you're going to see me do at a distance, I'm honoring and respecting you. Ladies, please take that. The second thing that she does that's for all of us is purity. She veils herself. That's where we get the tradition of veiling yourself at a wedding. That there's no one that's come this close until I take that veil up. Now, many of us have made mistakes and God can forgive. Please don't let this be a roadblock that you don't hear what I'm going to say because of mistakes you've made. But she comes with purity and she says, I want to be respectful and I want to be pure. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 3, it says, it is God's will that you would be sanctified, that you would learn how to control your bodies, not in lustful passions like the heathens that do not know God. So we're all to be pure. We're to be pure mentally. We're to be pure physically. So singles, why is God asking you to wait until marriage? Why is he keeping you pure in that way? Is it just to keep something fun away from you? Why is he saying living together is not the best plan? He's saying that for these reasons. What is supposed to happen is that your relationship grows at depth. Your conversation grows at depth. Now your interaction of what you're talking about is at a deeper level. Then you begin to be at such a deeper level, you say, we want to get married. The two is going to become one. Now our relationship is so deep that we're committed to each other in our finances, our house, everything. We are in a deep level. Then our physical bodies are at a level of depth of intimacy that can be maintained by our conversation and our lifestyle. Unmatched depth through physical impurity is what happens. Your conversation, your lifestyle, your interactions can't hold this kind of depth. The two become one, and it changes everything. And so he says, an unmatched depth, that's why I want you to stay pure. Second, there's a difference between men and women within sex. Not biologically, but emotionally. See, women have to cross an emotional bridge before they can cross a physical bridge. Men cross a physical bridge and then cross an emotional bridge. Doesn't mean that ladies aren't physical and that men aren't emotional. That's not what I'm getting at. I'm saying God's rigged it that is wired together that women first are emotional, then physical. Men are first physical, then emotional. That's why trashy books for women don't have pictures. That's why trashy books for men don't have words. One's emotional, one's physical. You can see how it plays out in just the ways that smut is sold. So God says, purity, purity. Students, I want to speak to you as clear as I possibly can because I love you. There are three decisions that are going to make a huge difference in your life, and here's what they are. What do you do with alcohol? What do you do with drugs? And what do you do with sex? Those three decisions, the rest of us in this room have seen lives crater over. And if you will make the right three decisions with alcohol, drugs, and sex, you will be way ahead Now, I'm not negating any spiritual aspects at all. God doing that in you. But I'm telling you, those three decisions are major, particularly, it's for all of us, yes. But particularly, I want to say to you as students, or young singles as well. You mess around with those things, you're going to get into some trouble. So here, she's respectful. She's pure. It says, one lady put a quote like this, a senior in high school. She says, when you date, you start sharing gifts like flowers and candy. Then when a couple becomes engaged, they give special things like a diamond ring or personal things. The most personal thing that you could ever give anyone is yourself. Nothing is more precious to give than that. Candy, flowers, out to eat, diamond, precious things. We're sharing a home. Now I give you myself. It's a progression, and it's a progression for a reason. Men, Isaac shows his wife depth and care. He shows depth and care. Did you see what was happening in that verse, in verse 63? He went out into the fields one night to meditate. One evening, he was looking up, and he saw the camels approaching. Here he is by himself. Some solitude brings death. He's looking up at the heavens, pondering possibly the things of God. He's meditating, thinking about deep things, is what one commentator puts it. He's a man of depth, and he's a man of care. Let's talk about depth first. Men, we are typically far more shallow than ladies. We are typically far more shallow than ladies. We are satisfied to talk about the surface. If you go out and hang out with the guys and your wife says, what'd y'all talk about? You're like, I don't know. We talked about work. Talked about the sporting game that was happening. Talked about politics a little bit. Talked about this, that, and that. Well, how are their kids? I don't know. I didn't ask. I figured he still got his. I still got mine. Everything's cool. Well, how's he doing? I mean, is he struggling with? I don't know if he's struggling or not. I mean, he seemed fine to me. He didn't say anything. Right? I mean, guys, we're just, it's cool. It's not cool, tell me. And if you don't tell me it's not cool, then I'll assume it's cool. So we just kind of stay here. Ladies have a deep well of the heart. Mary pondered these things in her heart. And men, we have to have greater depth in relating with our wives. Single men, you're going to have greater depth relating with ladies. They have a depth to them that is challenging and encouraging to us as men. And we should come along and say, now let me walk deeper. Let me walk spiritually deeper. Let us not always be led, because this is how we've been. We're always led by the Christian ladies. Men, we're supposed to be the leaders. And so let us be ahead in the depth. And let us be able to walk in depth, to be able to say, I want to talk deeply. I want to listen. I want to hear. Tell me what's really going on, and then listen. And when she begins to talk, this is what I do. I'm just confessing. I have usually guessed the end of the story by about halfway through. At three-fourths way through, I've got the answer to the end of the story that I guessed. By the end of the story, I give my answer. We're done. You got the answer. What's the deal? That's not depth, and that's not what she wants. She wants to finish the story and then start it over again. And then say it a little bit different, and then start it over again. Start it over again. And you just sit there, guys, and you say, I can sit here for 10 more minutes. I can do this. I can do this. And you just listen. And then at the end, you hug, and you go, wow, man. And then you listen to it again, right? That's how it is. And so the depth comes, and then on about fifth time around of telling the same story in a little bit of a different way, then they might say, might, not always, what do you think? And then you get to give your answer. But guys, we've got to walk with depth. We are shallow as men because we don't read. We don't talk about deep things. We don't pray for more than just bless this food, Lord. We're not deep people. And God is saying, meditate, walk in depth, and you'll be a blessing to that woman that's pondering things in her heart. And then share and say, you know what, I'm struggling with this. I've been thinking about, what do you think about? And talk at a deeper level, and it'll be a blessing to both of you to be able to do that. See, guys like to, one book says to sit side by side. We like to go to a sporting event and sit next to somebody and talk as we look. Girls like face to face. But ladies, if you'll give us the side by side, we'll give you the face to face. And guys, if you give them the face to face, then they'll give you the side by side. So if you want to go to a sporting event with your wife, go have a salad and sit across the table. Ladies, if you want to sit across the table over a salad, then sit next to them in a sporting event or two and be able to let that go back and forth. Men, we've got to walk in depth. Secondly, he takes into his house, into his mother's tent. in verse 67. He takes Sarah into the tent. He cares for her. He cares for her. He says, I want you to know that you are safe with me. You're okay with me. I'm going to take care of you. You don't need to be nervous. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to take good care of you. If anybody's messing with you, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to take this moment. We were driving in the car, and my son asked, he said, Daddy, when can I punch somebody in the nose? I thought for a minute. I thought, you know, a man needs to be a man. I said, if you ever see anybody hurting your mom or your sister, you punch him in the nose. He went, cool, yeah. He just needed to know that there was a time in which, and I know turn the other cheek, but I'd punch him in the nose, what I'm saying. You need to know as a man, there's a time you can punch somebody in the nose. And the time is when your special someone's not being taken care of. And that's how a man cares. And I tell you, any woman that has a man of depth and a man of care like that, she'll be respectful, and she'll be pure. And men will be pure, and we'll be honoring as well, and we'll care. It's just a nice little loop how God puts it together. And so in this, he says, I'm going to care for you. You come into my mom's tent. You come into this place, our family. You are now one of us, and I care for you. I tried to come up with a big illustration of some man that, like, got killed on behalf of his wife or his family. And you know what I thought? That's not the right illustration. Here's the right illustration. It's a man that goes to the well every day. He listens every day. He cares every day. Doesn't have to be a grandiose, took a bullet for his wife. It's just he sat by the bedside when she was sick. He cared for her, all of those things. And that takes a lady's heart to a different place. As we wrap up, I want to give you just some good, connect the Old Testament, New Testament. The well of Jesus satisfies, my last point. The well of Jesus satisfies. There's wells in the Old Testament. And these wells are places, there's three times in the Old Testament where a well is where a relationship, a marriage relationship begins. We've got here with Isaac and Rebekah. The marriage relationship begins with Isaac and Rebekah. Where? At a well. The servant goes to a well, she goes to a well. In Genesis 29, Jacob and Rachel, it's going to begin at a well. That's where their marriage relationship is going to begin. Then you go further into Exodus chapter 2, and Moses and Zipporah are going to meet at a well. And then we fast forward with this marriage at the well kind of thing going on in the Old Testament. We fast forward, get this on, watch them connect. And in John chapter 4, Jesus shows up to talk to the woman at the well. And he says, go and get your husband, marriage. I don't have one. I know you don't have one because you've had five. And you're living with a man at this time. So the Old Testament wells of marriage become Jesus is the groom to be there for the bride that's been married five times. We always lump her into being this bad wife. We don't know if the husband sent her away or not is how it could happen in the culture. She could have been a great wife and the guy's a deadbeat. And so here in this moment, God comes, or Jesus comes, and she comes to him and he says, now at the well, drink of water that you'll never thirst again. You found your husband, and his name is Jesus. And I'm going to walk with purity to the cross, and I'm going to respect my father, and I'm going to show depth and care like you've never seen before, because I'm going to give my life. And the woman at the well comes in her routine, and Jesus in his strategy says, here's water that you'll never thirst again. Because following Christ is crucial for a successful marriage. You got to drink of the water that'll give you, that will quench your thirst, so you're not looking for the water in your spouse.
Thank you for listening to the teaching ministry of Houston's First Baptist Church. We invite you to worship with us anytime you're near. We're located at the corner of I-10 West and the 610 Loop. Visit us online at houstonsfirst.org.